Welcome back to Copper Country Today. I'm your host, Rick Allen. Joining me in studio right now from the 97th District Court, Honorable Mark Wistie. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Of course, we wouldn't be having you here if it wasn't a very important issue, and it is one. Now, we all know that the drug use and opiate use here in this area and nationwide is a problem that just continues to escalate. And you have a unique perspective from where you are, in that you're basically got a front row seat to seeing what, you know, some of the problems that we have. Probably nobody else better, except for maybe one of these EMT personnel that have to respond to drug overdoses, that you see kind of the problems that the drug use is causing. We're looking at hopefully some solutions, or at least attempts to solve the problem, from the legislature. We're going to be talking about those, but we also want to talk about the effect that it's having here locally. So, Judge, you asked to be able to come in here and talk about this problem. What are you seeing?
Well, people are dying. To the best of my calculations, I had asked the county clerk to go through the death certificates for the last year, and it appears that we had 8 people dying of opioid overdoses in the past calendar year, as best as we could determine from reviewing the death certificates.
And that is up from previous years?
I do not know what it was in previous years. I am certain that it is up dramatically.
I remember there was about a week where there were 2 or 3 in a row that happened in succession, and this was probably maybe in the springtime, and we were all kind of throwing our hands up in the air, saying, is there any way to stop it, and how did we ever get here?
How we got here is largely a result of the pharmaceutical industry. A company named Purdue Pharmaceutical started marketing a drug called OxyContin in the mid-90s, which is essentially heroin in a pill form. Historically, doctors had been very reluctant to prescribe opiates because of the addictive potential. Purdue deliberately lied to the medical profession and went on the biggest marketing campaign in the history of medicine. To sell OxyContin. They basically fraudulently told the medical, they did fraudulently tell the medical profession that this drug was not addictive. And of course, for whatever reason, the medical profession followed them pretty much blindly. And that was really the start of it. Purdue was eventually convicted of criminal fraud, but was merely fined and are still in business. It primarily began with the prescription drug epidemic, though, which is still continuing, and that is still primarily the problem. So in a nutshell, that's what caused it.
I've had family members with chronic health conditions that have been prescribed Vicodin for years, and I've seen the effects firsthand that, you know, they would get it, and in small doses, it was very effective. And then, like any other drug, the longer they took it, the less effective it was. They had to keep taking more. And so, before long, when they were getting their prescriptions refilled, they were getting basically a tub of Vicodin.
Yeah, Vicodin is also one of the opiates. It's in the same category as oxycodone, but is a little less severe. And that's the problem with the opiates, that you simply develop a tolerance. And in fact, the American Medical Association came out with an article or a study about a year and a half ago, and their finding was that these opiates they're not effective for controlling long-term pain because of the tolerance people develop. So they don't even work, really.
When I saw a doctor for a condition that I have, and pain was one of my symptoms, I was, thinking I was going to go in there. This was locally, and within the last couple of years, and think I was going to get prescribed, some sort of opiate pain medication. And they're like, "Yeah, we really kind of don't want to give you anything," and gave me Motrin instead. In fact, I still take that, and it was specifically because my doctor said that there are too many opiate pain medications out there right now. Unless I absolutely have to, I do not want to prescribe any to you.
Yeah, I think the medical profession, for the most part, is now aware of this and it is not as easy as it used to be to get these prescriptions. Unfortunately, there are a number of rogue doctors who are still writing these scripts, and the drug companies, of course, have every interest in the world in continuing this. In fact, I don't know what date this is going to air, but this is the day after this drug czar was just disqualified for pushing that bill through Congress that allowed them to dispense these pills without any real DEA approval.
That's correct. From what you've seen, the different people coming through, what effect does the addiction to these types of drugs have on these people?
It's devastating. It's a very powerful drug. Destroys their lives. They lose their jobs. They don't work. They lose their relationships. It just devastates them. And as I said, I mean, those eight people, I think three of them had been through our court system. I mean, ultimately, they die. We had 52,000 deaths in the year 2015, which is the last year that the CDC keeps these statistics. 33,000 of those were opioid deaths. And you're also seeing a great increase in heroin. In 2010, heroin accounted for about 5% of those deaths. They're up to 25% now. What's happened is, according to the American Society of Addictive Medicine, roughly 80% of the heroin users start on the prescription drugs. And now that it is becoming somewhat harder to get the prescription drugs, they're going over to heroin. 94% of the people in treatment for heroin addiction said they started on the prescriptions, and their main reason for going over to the heroin was it was easier to get and cheaper. So I think yes.
Being that this is a small town, you often know some of these people that come through the court system there. You may even know them prior to drugs became a problem, and you've seen them, and sometimes you see them way more often than you would like to, being in the system. Watching them change, what effect does that have? You know, it's devastating, but you know, you go from somebody who has very little exposure to drugs at all, and it completely changes them?
Well, by the time they get into our system, they're generally having major exposure to drugs. As you're aware, we've been running this treatment court for, I think we're in year four right now, and essentially just about everybody in Houghton County that has a problem with this that is criminally related, with some exceptions, is sent into the treatment court. And we've had fairly good success with that. Don't have the final numbers right now, but about 60 to 70% of them are getting through our program, which means they're abstinent for at least 180 days. So we are seeing an improvement in that respect. Historically, you would jail them, and that's just useless if you're dealing with an addiction. In fact, most of the studies show jailing them just makes them worse.
Of course, we've well documented the overcrowding at the jail, and even at the Houghton County Board meeting this month, we've heard about the heavy caseloads of the public defenders. Does the drug problem, is that causing both the overcrowding at the jails and overloading of our defenders?
Yes. That's short answer, yes it is.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then we need to do some things. What are some things maybe we can do, like through the legislation?
Well, that is one of the main reasons that I asked to be on your program today. Michigan, through Governor Snyder's office, and through the lieutenant governor in particular, appointed an opioid task force in 2014. They came out with a series of recommendations at the end of October of 2015, which, and many of these bills have now come to fruition and are currently pending in the House of Representatives. And they're quite lengthy. Would you like me to go over them? How much time do we have left?
Oh, I've got at least 15 minutes. So.
All right, there's basically 10 bills that are going through. One of them is we have what is called a Michigan Automated Prescription System, or MAPS. And one of the bills is, MAPS has been automated considerably. It was difficult to work, but they've They've done something to allow it to work much more efficiently. And my understanding is you can go on to Maps right now, and within a couple of minutes you can get all the information you need. The first one is they're going to require the physicians to go look at the maps before prescribing any of these opiate drugs. The reason for this is a lot of the addicts will doctor shop. So they'll go and see Dr. A on Monday, Dr. B Friday, Dr. C the following Tuesday, and it's going to require physicians to review these before prescribing. There will be disciplinary action taken against them if they do not follow that. There's also going to be an increase in penalties for criminal penalties for physicians who illegally dispense drugs. It's also going to require, and how effective this is actually going to be is a good question, because this requirement is also in the marijuana law and is effectively ignored. But you're going to have a bona fide physician-patient relationship prior to prescribing. So, for instance, up here, there are certain doctors who you could go to in Marquette, who I shall not name, and are well known by drug-seeking people. And you can you and I could take a ride down there this afternoon and come back with probably all the opioids we wanted. And they're going to require them to have an actual physician-patient relationship. If they don't have that, there would be criminal penalties associated with it, as I understand the legislation. Now, that is the same standard that applies to the marijuana, but it's very difficult to enforce, but that will at least be out there. There's also going to be a bill that will instruct students in the high school level about the dangers of the opioids. There's also going to, we're going to require physicians who write these things to provide information to their patients about the dangers, and particularly the dangers of substance abuse disorder developing from this. You're also going to have limits on how much of these can be written. Historically, you would go in, right now, for instance, there's enough prescriptions being written that there's one for every man, woman, and child in the state of Michigan right now. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
What this is going to do is put a limit on how many days the scripts can be written for. So if you have a chronic pain condition, it's going to be 30 days, and it can be renewed after that. But you're at least going to be requiring you to go into the physician to have it take a look at it. Because again, what they're finding out is these pills are really not that effective in controlling pain. For an acute condition, you break your leg as an example, it's going to be a 7-day limit. Pain management places are going to be required to be licensed by the state. So right now you can open up a pain management clinic, call yourself a pain management doctor, and that's it, because you say you are, and you're going to be required to be licensed. They're going to allow treatment options for Medicaid beneficiaries. Right now, the Medicaid does not necessarily pay for everything, and this is going to allow for medication-assisted treatment. There's also going to be parental consent required before a minor can receive the opioid medications. A lot of these kids that get hooked, it's amazing, a lot of them are athletes.
Yeah.
And they'll injure a knee, we were just talking about Brett Favre before he went on the air.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll be injured, they get on these things, they're hooked, and that's it. It's astonishing. I just was back from a seminar, and they were showing us some movies, and it was very sad. You had just, high school football players with the world before them, and hurt a knee, and they get on that, and that's it. Boom, they're gone. So this is a very comprehensive set of bills that is currently pending. It's very similar to what Governor John Kasich did in Ohio, and it's modeled on this. It actually is bipartisan. It's supported by both Democrats and Republicans, and I've talked to some of our legislators about this. Some of them know about it, some of it don't. This is not going to be a magic bullet. It's not necessarily going to end the problem, but I do think it will at least cause the medical community, and I know they're doing the best. Well, it's going to require them to do more before just writing these scripts. And I would urge anybody who is listening to this, who supports this, I do, and everybody in the treatment court movement supports it, to contact their legislator and urge them to vote for this series of bills. So,
As you were running down the list.
And that was a long list, so yeah, okay.
Yeah, and if I can make any of that available online, I will certainly attempt to do that. But as you were running down the list, I'm thinking of past legislation that was, you know, always described as getting tough on crime or getting tough on drug crime. And it was always had to do with, you know, maybe increasing jail sentences or making it harder for first-time offenders. The list that you went down there all, you know, largely had to do with the supplier, not the buyer.
Well, yeah, I'm getting on my treatment court soapbox. It's idiotic to put someone with a drug problem in jail. There's study after study, and if you have to do it, you have to do it. For instance, in the treatment court, they're not following. Yes, they will get some jail time. But if your underlying problem, which it is addiction. I mean, 75% of the crime in this country is because of people who are addicted to drugs and or alcohol. That's probably 90% in this county. They're nonviolent offenders. Well, if you want to deal with it, you have to deal with the addiction, which is what we're doing now in the court system and putting them in. If somebody is telling you that you're going to do something about drug addiction by jailing them, they're an idiot. I mean, it's just that simple. They don't know what they're talking about. And you should run the other way. That's outmoded. It's foolish. This is a brain disease. It's like treating somebody with cancer by locking them up. If you had diabetes, it's like treating them for diabetes by locking them up. This is a disease. We have to recognize this as a society, and we have to quit stigmatizing it.
Seeing the number of people that come through the court system, I think it's Judge Goodman that often tells them, and says there's only three outcomes here. You're either going to end up in jail, you're going to get better, or you're going to get dead. Because, you know, they don't have any other options when they're coming through. You know, by the time that you're handling them, you know, their options are very limited as far as where they can go from there.
Well, they've got the option in our court to get better. We've got quite an extensive drug treatment court going here. In fact, I would say per capita, we probably have more people in there than any other court in the state. And I think we've got a really good team there, and we've been working really hard at this. But we've completely changed the way we do business in the last 4 years.
Has it reduced your rate of recidivism?
Yes. It's difficult to measure that. You have to understand that people coming into the treatment court are all repeat offenders, with one or two exceptions. The numbers for last year were 190. Since we've started it, we've had 193 people go through there. Roughly 70% of them have graduated. Out of that, we've had about a 5% recidivism rate. And statistically, you'd be at around 12 normally. So for these people, for the brief period of time we've been running it, and the numbers aren't large enough to be statistically significant, but there's no question that this reduces recidivism. In our court, it appears to be doing it. Nationwide, there are numerous studies on this. General numbers are it'll be at least a 15% reduction. And that's pretty well established by, there's very little question that that's actually going on. This does reduce, it reduces crime, period, end of story.
Yeah. Okay. I can picture that because in addition to just simply the drug crime, the use or production of the drug crime, of the drugs, so many things tend to get tagged along with it through, you know, theft, mainly because they're trying to get money, and then the use of drugs, being on drugs, is can cause you to commit other crimes, just because you've been under the influence.
Well, for alcohol, it's of course drinking and driving, which is extremely hazardous. That's actually the leading cause of criminal death in this country. Actually, in homicides, about 40% of the people who commit murder are drunk when they do it. In fact, I don't know. I'd have to think about it. I wasn't prepared for that question.
Oh, sorry.
I think we've had 5 or 6 homicides since I've been the judge here, and I believe at least 4 of them were people who were drunk. For the drugs, they're generally not physically And by drugs, I would mean the opiates and other things besides alcohol. They generally are nonviolent. A lot of times their crime is simply that they were in possession, which makes very little sense to me to be. Essentially, it seems to me what you're doing is you're criminalizing someone for having an addiction. The crime I do see them commit quite frequently is shoplifting. But there's very little violence associated with the opiates.
Okay, well, that's good news.
Well, I don't know if it's good news, but it's...
Well, I mean, it's better than the opposite.
Well, other than that they die from it, yes. So yeah. The opiate people kill themselves.
Mm. Since the creation of Upset West, have you seen a influx of people coming through the system and you know, the crackdown on the drugs in the area, especially the heroin?
They had some initial heroin busts when it started out, and I haven't seen a whole lot lately. And I don't know that we ever had a real... There was heroin in this community. There still is. I don't know if it ever hit us as bad as some of the other places.
Sure.
You'd better direct that to Upset West, because for one thing, they're undercover, so they're not telling anybody what they're doing.
Well, I just noticed that from a news standpoint, is when the Upset West was created, it seemed like I was in your courtroom a lot, you know, watching, you know, people being filed through had been, you know, caught in different sting operations that Upset West had done. And I haven't been in too many of those lately. It was making me wonder, well, I, you know, is it being effective as far as what they're cleaning up?
Well, again, it would appear to be to me, because one of the main reasons they got it is we were getting these heroin people coming up from downstate. And that seems, knock on wood, to have stopped, at least for the time being. But you'd really have to ask them. You're right, it doesn't seem to be coming into court as often.
Is there anything more that Houghton County can do as far as right here? Of course, this is a nationwide problem, and the legislature is looking at those things. Well, is there any more that we can do as a county to help with the problem?
Oh, there would be a number of things. What we could really use is some sort of a halfway house for women, or an inpatient treatment program for women, or an inpatient treatment program up here, period. Because Phoenix House has one, but I don't think they take anybody but men up there. And we would really need one for women. Some of the women are trying to work on that. And they have a committee going, but I'm not sure how far they've gotten on it. Halfway house, I presume people know what that is. It's after you're out of inpatient treatment. One of the big problems with recovery is you cannot associate with the people you used to use with. By the time you're this badly addicted, you generally don't know anybody but other addicts. And so you get out, you really don't have a job, and there's a tendency just to go to start hanging out with these people you used to hang out with. And once you do that, you're finished. It's next to impossible. So I think a long-term halfway house would be useful. Above all else, I think quit stigmatizing these people. You know, they're sick. They should be... And they're stigmatized, and that really needs to stop. That doesn't help at all.
All right. Judge, I really appreciate you coming in. It's been great talk. As I said, you sort of have the front row seat to see the ups and downs of people coming in. And when I say ups and downs, of course, those who are not getting the help and not responding to the help, but the ups and that you've seen a number of people who have responded, who have gotten treatment, and now have the opportunity to be the kind of citizen that, they had the potential to be because they got the help and through the treatment court.
We have seen that. Yes, we have.
So those are good news. Well, again, appreciate you coming in for the interview today.
Okay, thanks for having me.
Copper Country Today.
And again, contact your legislator and ask them to vote for these opiate legislation.
Absolutely. Copper Country Today, we'll be right back.